Hi everyone, you're listening to the Vialucci Podcast, uncensored and completely unedited discussions about life and everything in it. We hope you enjoy the show.
I was just like, I nearly fell down the stairs. Hoover.
Why?
I was doing the hoovering, for one.
Oh, right.
Because I haven't got a cleaner, so I have to come in clean before to make it presentable for people.
It looks amazing.
And I would have came down the stairs, and I'm not, because I get here early, and there was never anyone here. The one time I tripped, there was a person at the stairs going into
filming
the office downstairs, and I just thought, that's not fair. Like, that's clear. Like, there's never been anybody there. And the ones I tripped, and the bloody thing nearly came down on top.
Maybe they were sabotaging you. Who knows?
The only other thing that couldn't have happened, like, the thing burst and the dust went all over me.
To be fair, it looks very OCD clean here. I'm like, wow, immaculate.
Don't you think?
It's amazing.
I think it looks very clean.
I got to the point where I was picking the last bits up. But then every time you pick one bit up, it highlights the other bit over there. So you just go, forget it. It's just like, anyway.
Well, that is OCD.
Yeah, that is OCD.
No, it's just clean. What are you looking at? Okay. I'm doing it for you, by the way. I don't care. Anyway, so.
And for our guest.
Oh, yeah, I am for me. Your guest.
So how would you describe yourself? There's a lot of description of what would you say you are? You meet you in the street. Hi, what do you do?
I would say I'm a motivational speaker.
Right.
I speak for a living, but I'm also an addiction counsellor and a transformational coach. I hate the word, life coach. Right. I help people break free from self-sabotage. I am someone that had obviously battered it myself, so obviously I talk a lot about addiction. I battered addiction young and got sober at 18,
and there was a load of addiction. So is it addictive personality, or was it at that time?
What do you mean? What,
because you had a few addictions.
Yes.
I don't know, is bulimia class?
Bulimia was, yes.
Is that class?
Eating disorders are class as an addiction, a food addiction, I would say. Mine manifested in many ways. But yeah, so it started off with drinking drugs. And then it manifested into an eating disorder. Mainly restriction, binging, purging.
And so
the one that I hate talking about.
You said you live in Bali now.
I do live
so
in Bali.
You're going back. When did you move there?
I moved there 4 months ago.
And where were you before that?
I was in London.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So where are you from in London?
I am from Hertfordshire.
Oh, okay.
I'm from an area called Radlett.
Yeah,
I'm from Radlett.
I'm from Hertfordshire as well.
Where are you? Whereabouts are you from?
Never mind.
Okay.
So no. No, it's all right.
Hemelhemster's nice. Does the job.
We've had a couple of guests on there that have been from that town. I didn't realise.
What, Hemelhemstead?
Yeah. Don't keep saying it. Oh, anyway.
It doesn't narrow it down.
You have a trauma.
No, but I like to leave and go back to quiet.
No, I get it. No, I get it 100%. But
Radlett, that's a nice area.
It's a really nice area.
Were you born there?
I was born there, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Went to a nice school. I'm Jewish. I come from two brothers and sisters.
Are both parents Jewish?
Both parents Jewish, born and bred. And yeah, I had everything I wanted on the outside.
Yeah.
But just very, a lot of low self-esteem and low self-worth growing up.
Did that just come in gradually, or did something happen?
A lot of trauma in my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And family stuff?
Family stuff, yeah.
All right. And do you still speak with your family?
I love them to bits.
And really?
And the funny thing is even though we've had a lot of trauma, there's a lot of, sticking through.
Was it passed down trauma, or did it just hit you?
Passed down. Most of my family members have all been through something.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. I would say that addiction runs in the family.
Yeah.
So a couple of my family members are sober, which is amazing because we're all on that similar journey.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that I was born with a different mindset and a different brain.
Yeah.
It was wired differently. So.
So how long did how did the addictions come in?
So obviously,
you had a few drinks, or the food probably first.
Yeah, so obviously food for me was always something that I used to change the way I felt, especially in my childhood. Like, you know, I'd always feel that I had to, you know, feel incredibly intense feelings, and, you know, food would basically be my comfort.
Yeah.
Had a very bad relationship with food. And I was always into sports growing up. So, like, I used to run for county. I used to do half marathons and do triathlons. Like, fitness was my thing. But I had this incredibly high expectation of myself in the way that I looked and the way that I was. And it led me to some very, like, self-sabotaging behaviours because I couldn't keep up with it. So, you know, by the age of 14, 15... I basically got offered a modeling contract. It was really like the best thing I've in that time. I thought that, you know, was going to be for me, but it led me to some really dark places with that expectation to look a certain way, the expectation to be a certain size. And I idolized it. You know, I thought that was going to make me happy. And then I couldn't keep up with that happiness. And, you know, that was the thing. It's like I had these secrets that I couldn't hide.
Yeah, it's a bit like if you got low self-esteem, I said this something, don't get involved in acting where you're going to get a thousand rejections.
No, but that was it.
I know this girl did modelling. Anyway, she did modelling. And she said, without jest, she's just saying this is what we used to do. She said, if your stomach would rumble and somebody heard it, they'd high five you.
Yeah, literally.
Oh my God. And just I say remember, like, well done for not.
No, but it's true. And I remember I worked for Abercrombie and Hollister, and I was like, this is so cool. I'm surrounded by so many good looking people. But like, they used to literally, like, one in the interview process, they actually said this in the documentary recently, in the interview process, they would give you the job based on how you looked. And they would basically say, like, whether you're a model and you're on the shop floor or you're a cashier or you're an impact where you're basically in the back, like whatever. And they would like, they would check us with sizes of our jeans. Yeah. And they were like, are you a size zero? And I just remember thinking, I need to be a size zero. I need to be a size zero. And it was like this obsession.
Yeah.
Was there literally a zero though? As in like on a rack, you would see like a zero.
Yeah, I know 8, 12. I know, I get the idea of that. What's zero?
So it was actually class different. It was like 1, 2, 3, 0, 1, 2, 3. I think it was American sizes.
I was going to say, yeah, it's more.
But it was like a size. So size zero was size 6.
Okay.
Oh, right. I was this like 5'8" girl who has always had, you know, I've never been sticked thin. I've always had a body. My grandpa was a bodybuilder. He was Mr. Universe.
Oh, wow.
Really cool. My dad was always into fitness from a very young age. I always had like a voluptuous body or whatever, but like, I tried so hard to not have that body because I thought the only way I was going to get guys was to be thin.
Yeah.
It was.
When did the bulimia kick in? What age?
The bulimia kicked in when I was like 16 years old.
So had you left school by this point?
I was still at school. It was in my last 2 years at school. I remember being like size 6.
And did none of the teachers sort of give you a tap on the shoulder and say?
Not really. No. I hid it very well. Right, I was very good at hiding. And I was very good at keeping secrets, like my addiction.
You know, I also wonder, like, not to maybe give people a free pass, but maybe if you're a teacher, you're just like, well, it's not our place to say.
Yeah, 100%.
And also you don't know that someone can just be, some people just lose weight and they just can be very skinny and it can be what a, you know what I mean? Like, you don't necessarily want to, where I worked one time, there was a girl who quite obviously, without being unkind, quite obviously had an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And it was like the talk of the kind of shop, the staff, you'd be like, yeah. Every time I sit and somebody might go off, say, for example, they went off to university, come back to do work the summer, and they'd be like, is that so-and-so? Because I didn't recognise her.
Yeah.
But you don't even want to ask out polite.
But yeah, and people would do stuff like, and this probably didn't help, but it was well-meaning, would be like, oh, I can't finish my Sam, you know, I bought 2 sandwiches, I can't finish one, do you want one? Oh. Stuff like that. And you would just try and, she eventually left, I believe, from what I gather. I mean, it's the rumour, but from what I gather, her parents managed to get her help, but it meant having to leave kind of everything behind.
Yeah. That's it.
It was. But we were like, why can't anyone say anything? And the managers are like, what do you want us to say?
Yeah, that
is not going to be in contravention of employment law. Do you know what I mean? Because she wasn't turning up to work scruffy. You know, if someone turns up to work scruffy looking, etc., then you can say, well, your uniform, you know, you're not meeting the standard, but you can't say to someone, oh, you're
too skinny.
You look like you're ill.
Was social media a problem then, or was it not a thing then?
It wasn't so much social media. But it was for me, like, I had this whole thing growing up that, you know, I had a very good childhood. I was very lucky in my childhood, even though there was a lot of trauma. Yeah. Like, I had everything I wanted on the outside. But I just, for some reason, always tried to be out of reality. And I remember just becoming, I don't know if anyone relates to this, but I just remember, like, watching 90210, watching Gossip Girl, watching all these American programs, all these stick thin girls, you know, and that was the era of, like, Victoria's Secrets, and that was the era of, like, you know, the expectation that that was the beautifulness. And like I said, with Abercrombie and Hollister, like, your typical beautiful girl was, like, you know, blonde, whatever, and brunette, and I always had this look that kind of was like, I never wore makeup, I kind of, you know, people would say you're beautiful, whatever, but it fed the ego.
So even at that time would have been a different, it wasn't just you, it was, so like now where people are more curvy and dark skinned, that wouldn't have been a bigger deal at the time then.
No,
because at that time it was that, But you cocaine, saw it, didn't heroin you? Chic.
Yeah,
heroin
yeah, 100%.
You see, like, the Friends cast, like, midway through the whole run of the show. They're like, in inverted commas, they have their own, you know, their own normal shape per their frame.
Yeah.
Then they go super skinny in the middle.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And then they go back up to...
I was watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. Do you know that comedy, Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I've heard of it. I've not...
But when it starts, so when I watched it, it's a comedy about normal people. But anyway... then I go through and I looked and it was like season six. Mm. And I watched season six. All the faces had changed.
Stop.
As soon as the money had come in, everyone had obviously, everyone's doing yoga.
Yeah.
The faces, the lips, everything. And I thought, God, when you just jump, you don't
The cast of The Office, is the American Office, is a bit like that. Really? You see them early on and then you see them now and you're like, oh, they're
when they've got money, when they've got money and a PR agent and a market. Yeah.
Well, it's also like how you, I mean, or again, Chris Pratt in Parks and Recreation, he was kind of like
he's quite, a good looking man.
Yeah, but he was quite sort of schlubby and kind of big, even by his own admission, because I think he basically just said, I just let myself go. Because he went to Hollywood being all like, you see pictures of him, you're like, my God, you could fucking carve a house with those cheekbones. Then for whatever reason, he's let himself go. And then he's gone back to being this chisel, you know, Parks and Recreation ended. Yeah. He started getting into shape and then he got Guardians of the Galaxy.
But there's a lot, ripped. And look, I'm not like by far Hollywood actress or whatever, but, you know, in my years of kind of being in that world and being around a lot of those people, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, massive.
And I that's one of the reasons why I kind of like, fuck this and move to Bali, because, you know, even in London, like you're surrounded by so much expectation and so much kind of like the go-getter mentality of like, you need to be this, what your status is, da da da. And like, I got to a point in my life where I was like, this isn't me. Like, what actually makes me happy is not actually any of this. And a lot of my bulimia was, and my drinking and my drugging and all of that stuff was because I was trying to be someone that I wasn't.
Yeah.
And I think in this world, we're trying so hard to be someone we're not because we want to fit in.
When you go to Bali, is it advertising? Like, what are you not seeing there that you feel here? Because nobody's saying anything to you here. Is it the entertainment feels like, what goes away when you're there?
It's much more slower place. Looks. It's much more, no. Like, in Bali, there are a lot of influencers. There's a lot a lot of like flashiness. You still get it out there. But in Bali, like, you can wear whatever you want.
Yeah.
And you can walk around in flip flops. Much more slower pace of life.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, you can pick and choose what you want to do. I don't feel pressure out there to make loads of money because it's not as expensive.
Yeah. So you've moved out there. You left your home.
I'm living there right now.
Did you go? Yeah. Did you move with anyone? A friend?
I've got loads of friends that live out there.
Oh, okay.
I'm a very multicultured person. I've traveled the world. So people are like, oh my God. Like, you know, I lived in Hong Kong when I was 21, 3.5 years. Yeah. I was working out there and... like, I've always been the type of person where, like, some people are like, how do you move places and just, like, make friends? And I've just always made friends really easily.
Yeah.
So, like, I've got friends in Hong Kong. I've got friends in Bali. I've got friends in LA. I've got friends in Tel Aviv. I've got friends all over the world. So I've never been scared to move.
Have you got friends in London?
I do have friends in London.
I was gonna make sure.
I do have friends. No, actually, I'm kind of, I'm hated here. I'm joking.
So are you living, you're back at Radlett now, or do you go to a flat in London?
No, I'm back at my house with my family.
How is it when you go back? Is it a trip that you know you're going to leave, so it's all right, or do you like being there?
It's such a difficult one. I love my family. I love them. I adore them. I try not say about my past too much because I don't want it you know.
So it's just nice to come back and see them. And then
is that I am a family girl. I've always been a family girl. Through everything that we've been through in my life, you know, like I... know that they'll always be my family. I've done a lot of work around it, learning that like some family members won't necessarily be like the family that I expected them to be. But knowing that, you know, I have a short amount of time with them, I really try and be present because I know that they're not going to be here forever.
Yeah.
And that's why I do go home and try so hard to spend time with my family. Yeah, I do have this thing where I am. It is my safe haven in Bali.
How long have you been back?
I've been back for 6 weeks.
Do you have a routine of when you come back, like once a year or whatever, or just when you can?
Just when I can. There was no actual plan.
You've been back for 6 weeks.
Yes, so there was no actual plan for me coming home. My parents called me up. They were like, "We want you to come back for Christmas." I was like, "Fine."
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, and then I had this. I was invited to the House of Parliament for an event. And I was like, oh, I might as well stay for that because that's quite cool.
The alcohol?
the alcohol change thing, which Michael, my friend, is a ambassador as well. Then at the end, and then I got another talk that was in for this week. And then Sunday, I'm doing a talk with a couple of like really cool things, like Dapper Laughs, Ollie Ollerton from SAS. So I was like, I might as well come back because Bali's an incredible place, but there's a lot of opportunity in London. So I'm like, I might as well stay for that and then go back. And I think that I'm going to come back in July for a month. So I'm going to come back and forth a bit, but I know that that's my safe haven, my happy place.
Yeah. But it's nice if you can have that option that like, oh, I can come back, do some work, do some, you know, what you want to do and then go back there. And I suppose a lot of your coaching is like online.
It's all online.
It's all online. Well, there you go then. Why?
Well, that's the thing. So last year I was actually working as a brand partnerships manager at a massive gym. And I was doing that for 5 years and then I was working for another company. But I always had this thing, and I've done motivational speaking since I was 18 with the, you know, a couple of companies, did it in Hong Kong, stuff like that. But I always wanted my dream to be where I can work anywhere in the world and just be online. And that's my dream.
What did you, I know you weren't in a healthy mental state, but what did you want to do when you, outside of modeling, when you were 16, 17, 18, what was the long term? What were you just seeing modeling had gone past at that point? You weren't seeing.
I was working in clubs.
So you were.
I was looking after celebrities in clubs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like an entertainment event.
Yeah, well, no. So I was working in every London club like you'd think of. I don't know if you know the Box.
Rings a bit. Oh, no, I'm thinking.
We're not cool enough.
No, Box, yeah. The Box is actually there.
I thought it was a gym.
No, the box is a celebrity club. Oh, like, okay, you literally need to know someone to get in there.
Oh, right.
You cannot use your phones when you get in there.
Nice.
You walk in there, like, it's absolutely crazy. They have, like, shows.
Yeah.
We won't talk about the shows. Right, they're, like, outrageous. Yeah. But, like, you'll walk in there and, like, literally out of nowhere, they'll be like, Jazzy Jeff will perform, and then they'll be like, Sam Smith's here, and then they'll be like, Rudimental's doing a. It was just mad, and I was working.
Do you go to nightclubs now?
I still do. Yeah.
Oh, right. I thought that's sort of like keeping one foot in the danger zone when you go to nightclubs.
It is. No, it is, and it's funny because it took me 2-3 years getting sober to really work on myself and get to a place of like, you know, okay, this is what, you know, I need to be doing, and then I got to a point where I was like, I got sober at 18. Like, getting sober at 18, you know, you still want to live like an 18-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had a big chat with my brother about this. And I remember, like, I had a friend that was so resentful about going out and being around people that are drinking because she was sober. And I remember my brother being like, look, like, you're not going to have any friends if you do that. Yeah. Like, all my friends were doing drugs. All my friends were going out and partying. And I just, I had a lot of acceptance in my life. I knew that drinking drugs and bulimia took me to a dark place. I hated myself, couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I suffered really bad depression, anxiety. Work addiction was a huge one. Went back into rehab at 21 for that one. I've been through it all.
So do you not drink anything?
Completely teetotal.
Oh, okay.
And in 3 weeks, I'll be 11 years.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah.
It's weird for a 30-year-old to have 11 years experience of doing something.
I know, people, they're like, what?
So what were you doing in terms of like leisure at 18, 19? What were you where were you going? Would you still go to clubs, but you just wouldn't drink?
Yeah, well, I was completely not drinking. What Red Bull was my best friend for a
Red
while.
Red Bull. How many Red Bulls have you? 50.
That just reminds me of...
I was actually talking to someone about this that the other day at the House of Parliament. I was like, I used to literally go out. And I used to have like 5 Red Bulls.
Yeah.
I'd come home and I'd just literally have the shakes.
Yeah. Might as well do the drugs.
Might as well just do drugs. Yeah, it was awful. It was awful.
The director, Kevin Smith, his friend, Jay Muse, was a long-term heroin user. Yeah. And he said once he got off heroin, he said, I saw him drink more of Red Bull than I've seen anyone drink any other liquid. Yeah. He said, like, that should be the slogan. If you quit heroin, Red Bull's for you.
I was just in the gym 2 days ago and I was getting dressed and I just heard... where someone's opened a can, and there's a kid next to me, must be about 8 stone, and he's got the monster can. And he's
Monster's awful.
I wanted to say to him, listen, that's the worst thing you can drink before a gym because it's got all the acid in it. You're going to dehydrate.
It's too sweet.
But he's gulping it like it's water.
Yeah.
But they've slowly started doing this. I remember when Red Bull first came out, a lot of dorm women were drinking it. I was thinking, what's that drink? And they'd have like half a night. But now it's like everyone's just like,
it kind of seemed like it went away for a while. Like people stopped drinking Red Bull and Monster in like the vast quantities And now it's back.
But then
again.
They started doing bigger cans, and like you get a Red Bull, and it's like a triple.
It's
can.
Triple can. Yeah.
Well, I've just noticed you get like you. They did the triple shots, double shots of coffee, and I just saw one the other day. And it's a triple shot of coffee. You don't need that.
No, it's awful.
It's like £1.20.
But I just feel like I don't know if the government are just trying to fuck us. Sorry, I didn't mean to swear,
I just think it's
like,
just capitalism. It just makes money, so we'll just give you more sugar, more this.
But it's also about understanding the psyche of how our brains work and how human nature is. Like, you know. We do, and I actually was on, I'm doing an article in The Sun about this, about addiction and how our, you know, our brains are wired in the way that we are. Some people are more prone to addiction than others, but we all crave reward systems and we all crave dopamine. So
I just saw yesterday a guy I'd never seen. I mean, it sounds silly to say, and it sounds so obvious. He said, he's talking on his little profile name.
Formerly known as Twitter. Please, his full name.
He said, what did he say? He said, I'm on Twitter, so I'm a dopamine addict. And I thought,
Well, it's because it's the likes, isn't it? And
no, but it's true.
But, I mean, you say it until somebody type of addiction.
But do you know what they do? So I've heard this, Instagram and Twitter actually have an addictions team. They know how to bring, because we're like the guinea pigs. Yeah, we're guinea pigs to them. So like they know how to make us addicted to it.
And your phone knows how to manipulate you specifically. It learns what do you like, what do you... I mean, it's an addiction. It's like we joke, oh, I've got an addiction. Oh, yeah, my Twitter. You go, no, that's an addiction. Yeah, I mean, 100%. In fact, I say, sorry, again, my gym, which is I use whatever happens outside then comes into the... like I see how... But anyway, I don't want to be rude because I might go to the gym again. But
we won't know what gym you're in. You said where I live.
And anyway, so
can't say Hemel.
See, that's the worst thing. If you try and fight something, it just comes back.
It's
going to
be Theo's home, formerly known as
hashtag hashtag the gym.
Say Watford.
Well, I've got nothing. If you guess, I don't care. I'll have arguments. Yeah. But I noticed the phones when they started to come into the gyms, and you go, oh, look, somebody's got the phone. And then, oh, look, now he's got the phone. And then I'm looking around and now it's who hasn't got a phone. Yeah. But now I'm seeing people use the phone during an exercise, during an exercise. And now when they go to the toilet, they walk in on the phone, they're taking a piss. I'm thinking, you're using the phone at the cubicle, now walking back out. And go, so, and so it's not addiction anymore. That's a junkie.
Yeah.
And because everyone's doing it, you forget. You do know it's gone past addiction now. Your life revolves around that. Yeah. It's in everything. That's a junkie. But you can't. If I said coke, a crack junkie, it's terrible. But if it's just phone junkie, it's like, it's not a thing.
Well, because the harm is less immediately apparent, isn't it? Because obviously, if someone's doing crack or whatever, that's pretty quickly going to fuck up your life. But if someone's on their Instagram,
they're not in reality.
Also the withdrawals are huge. Like
it's the same thing. It's an addiction. It's no different.
I relate to it because I fully have my ups and downs on my phone. You know, when I was in rehab at 21, I probably want to do this again. But I gave my phone in for a month and I had full on withdrawals from it. I'd wake up and I'd literally wake up in the middle of the night and be like, get my phone. Where's my phone? Oh my God, this is so mad.
We were talking before we started, I don't know if you said, there was a woman on MSNBC and for a month she didn't use her phone. She used an analog phone with no text. So she came on, she spoke about it and she said, she was shocked, like her sleep got better because what she did is everything she needed, it was on the computer, social media and all that, and the phone, just the phone. And she said it took a few weeks, but then obviously I didn't bring the phone to bed because there was no point because it was just there.
Mm.
And she said, but now she's not going back. She said, because she realised, she didn't know, you know, but she said, until you get rid of it.
It's like a toxic relationship.
So we were saying you shouldn't have social media on your phone. Just put it over there at the computer. It's not, nothing's going to happen. You've still got it, but you don't need it there. And she said, she did an experiment, but she's not going back. She's sleeping because she didn't realize it's always there.
Yeah.
Like usually I've got a watch on, but I only got the watch. So 50 times a day, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Just to take the time. Yeah. When I'm walking somewhere, I don't put it in my pocket. I put it in a bag. So I have to go and get it. So there's no... there's a bit of a queue here. Let me just look. It's too much effort. So, and if you just do that a lot, you suddenly realise, I don't need... Because I remember, and it happened once with my best friend. I just asked him, where's your phone? And he went, I don't know, I think it's in the car. And I thought, oh, that's where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know, he's in the car.
It's not normal, though.
Yeah, he's older. He's an older generation.
Yeah, but that's the thing. The older generation, they're not on their phone as much. But yeah,
he didn't care. But it's the touching it all the time. Yeah. Like Schwarzenegger was talking about him. He said, it's not allowed in my bedroom. Mm. Doesn't matter what I've got to do, that phone does not come in here.
Yeah.
And when you get used to that, because you will just look and look and look again, and you go, but it creeps in. Mm-hmm. So you don't realise till somebody takes it away. They did a study where... they realise that when you think you've lost your phone, like not, oh, which pocket, when you actually, oh my God, I've lost it, it's the same as having a car crash, like the adrenaline kicks in.
Yeah.
So that adrenaline, it's like plaque in your body. It doesn't, because you don't do anything, you don't run, so it stays in your system.
Mm.
So that, they actually say, if you ever get stressed or like somebody honks your horn, you get angry, you have to clench your fist or do something. You have to get rid of that adrenaline, because otherwise it clenches.
That's why you should shake your fist at the other driver. Just
get out and just thump him one, do something, or run around the car a few times. It's a bit, when you're getting angry all them times, that's in your system, but you're not doing anything. So that's when you have heart attacks and things, because all the crap in your system. But he said, if you lose your phone, you get that panic.
Oh my God.
She said, that's like a car, you've just had a car crash. But you go, that's not normal.
Not normal.
That's mental. Like we haven't climbed to that. Like that. Little things like that, and keeping it out of the thing, keeping social media off your phone if you don't need it. But it's all stuff that we go, well, it's not important because it's only little things. You go, but those little things are what kill you.
But don't you think it stems towards us really deep down being scared to be alone?
I think it's the reward center. If it just comes down, it's the reward.
And it's the FOMO, I think, Matt.
Missing out. That's what I mean. It's like, you know, it's the same with like, you know, when we come back and we are sitting in a room and actually sitting, like, honestly, I'm awful at this. Actually, I don't really watch TV much anymore, but like, we sit in a room and we can't actually sit in a room and do nothing. We have to have
something. Well, what the phone does, the term friends is ridiculous. You call them mice. It doesn't, friends, it relates to nothing. Friend used to say to me, if as a friend.
A mice.
He said, if you can call them at 3 o'clock in the morning, say, I need bail money. If you think of that person.
If I had a friend who called me at 3 a.m. in the morning, they were no longer.
Oh, you bloody
middle class. You get to fuck.
No, I know people I could call and say, listen, don't ask any questions. I just need 300 quid. Can you come and get me?
I'd probably have some questions.
I think, yeah, they probably wouldn't actually. And they'd probably never talk to me again. But
they're a law-abiding citizen, so they're not going to do
it. No, it's about you don't ask questions if it's a friend. A family, you wouldn't.
I think you would.
Again, middle classes, never mind.
You know, I need a hammer, no questions asked. I might be like, I've got this wriggling bag.
I'm not getting involved anymore. I'm leaving.
Right. So what I'm saying is, the term friends is like a ridiculous. It's like a joke to say they're friends. They're not friends. But the thing is, it's removed you from other people. That's what it's done. It's put a device between you and reality. So the marketing is that you're more connected. The reality
You're not.
Is it's actually made you pushed further apart.
Yeah.
Because your body only reacts. Like, we only do face-to-face interviews here.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a pain. Oh, so much hassle. Now you need an address, and that's got to be near a train station. What a load of grief. Just do bloody Wi-Fi.
Face. Yeah, yeah.
Because
If I'm in the country, of course.
It tops up you. It tops up being around somebody.
Of course.
And I said, even to do with just the health, maybe... being around somebody else that smells different, or they have different an air about them, or that keeps you healthy. Surely, if you just removed yourself and become behind a computer, there's a thousand things from smells and.
But really, if you're behind a computer, you are alone deep down. Like, you're not connecting.
You're not connect. You're literally. It's a sleight of hand. You're not connect. It's the opposite. It's removed you away from people. And I know people that are just on the computer. And I'm telling you now, if you just met them, you'd think. There's something wrong with them.
Like, okay, question.
They're awkward.
I'm asking you now. I'm interviewing you. What do you think about AI then? And the metaverse?
It's so broad. Well, it's going to...
Because I see a lot of people on X.
Yeah.
Because I use it for business. Faking their photos. They're not real people.
Yeah.
They're living behind someone
else. Yeah, I've only just caught for the fact that people have filters. I'd heard the word, but I didn't know what it was. But like for dating, they'd have a filter. And I thought, but that's mental. Because you've got to meet them. Why wouldn't be humiliated knowing you've got...
It's insecurity or whatever it is, but then it becomes more... an insecurity because you know it's not the real you. You're editing your photos.
Well, I knew
it's a cycle.
I knew an acting coach, and she said the weird thing is, she said celebrities are always insecure because what it is they're seeing perfected images of
them everywhere. It is perfection, yeah.
So they're actually quite shy because they know that when you meet them, all you've seen is that, but they know what they look like. Mm. She said, and what's happened is that's filtered down to everyone.
Yeah.
Because now you've given a perfect image of you with filters and things like that. So to you, the image of you online is more important, like the celebrity, than you are. As long as whatever you see there is more important, that's whatever that. So it doesn't matter when I see you, because all that matters is what you see there, which is an avatar of you.
Mad.
So that's, if you're basically going into just being an avatar, you don't matter, then all, you push all your chips into this and you go, but the problem is, and this is where the friction's going to come in, you still have to live a life.
Well, this is...
You have to get up and go to places that, and you've got to carry, which one are you? Oh, really? And to meet somebody, you've got a filter on and they're dating and then you've got to walk in and see them and go, hang on.
It's classic where the head, it's just a headshot.
Do you remember the Asian guy? He sued his wife because in Asia, they like 20 years ago, specifically, they were having like bone reconstruction and their eyes widened.
Oh, it was mad.
Like, and to look American.
Yeah, crazy.
And so he met his wife, had a child with her, and of course the eyes were like thinner, and he realized that she'd had so much work done. So the child looked like it come from like working in the field sort of thing. Like, and he sued her for money to say like, that's not what you look like. And now I've got a kid that doesn't look like this Americanized version. It looks like they, you know, they're from the hills.
Oh my God.
Actually sued her. But you go, at a certain point, you go, I don't know, what do you actually
think?
Like?
I feel like, but also I feel like they're both wrong there.
Yeah, because I'm like,
you're trying to have some eugenics.
Yeah, I'm surprised you could sue her. But
well, but you can try and sue anyone for anything, yeah, but whether the judge just goes,
because I knew
she said,
I was talking about what type of guy she liked. She said, I said, oh, is it the Love Island? She said, no, God, no. She said, if I saw somebody with them teeth, she said, I'd always wonder, what did your teeth look like before you had them all done? Like, why have you had them all done? It must be because at best it's insecurity. Or worse, it was some terrible thing with your teeth. But but that thing of, you have to realize the world is trying to pull you into a fake. That's fine. If you're a billionaire, that's fine. You don't have to do anything in the world. But you've got to live a life. So you've got to fight back. And you're talking about AI or online profile. That's why we do this. This having to come into London and meet people. I said, because you've got to hold on to that. It won't stay. Mm-hmm. You've got to fight
for it. I also think that this is why deep down people are struggling with depression, anxiety, substance abuse, self-sabotage, because of that underlying issue of insecurity.
You'd have to go, look, this is what you've done to yourself. You've removed yourself from being in shops, right? You're going shopping there. You've removed yourself from dating, having to be... like when people say, well, it's weird that they feel weird. Right, I've said this before. TV scared me. TV presenter, beautiful, fantastic, one of the most talented people, loves everyone. Really, like an ideal TV presenter.
You won't know names.
No way. But she said, oh, you're not going to like this. She said, but I went to do the internet dating thing, right? And I just thought, oh, God, not you. Anyway, and she said to me, I can remember where we were, and I suddenly thought, right, if they've got her, the world has changed. And she said, I swear to you, I can remember where I was. And she went, I said, but why don't you just meet somebody like... And she went, well, how else am I going to meet him?
Yeah.
And the question, I thought, real life?
Yeah.
But the question, the honest question, where else am I going to meet somebody? Go, well, I think people met before the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the best way to meet, naturally.
But the thing of everyone, your people now have been taught to be scared of other people. Why are you when I go to the gym and I speak to somebody, I have to change my demeanor because I know that I look at them and they go, like, what? I'm just, do you mind if I, and they look like they, I'm in my phone and now this person, this human's come to me because you're held in place by doing things. When you stop doing things, you're not you. Mm. You're just experiences happening all the time. And when you remove people from you, you lose skills. Mm. They're not ingrained in you. They're there because you had to go to school and you had to do things. And when you hide behind dating apps, you don't go to the shops, your conversations are online, you lose what you think you are. You will be more, less confident in front of people.
Agreed.
You will now, it's now got to the point where if I say to someone, right, go and tell that person you find attractive, can I have your number? The horror. And the other person will assume, even though they want somebody to talk to them, they will be freaked out. We go, so that's happened now. That's not like that dystopian future. That's happened, and it happened because of that. 10 times a day, that took who you are away from yourself. That took your confidence.
Well, dating up in itself is a really
Theo is waving his phone for the people.
Oh, right. Yeah. But no, it's this is anti you. This yeah. isn't a thing that,
I don't disagree.
Oh, silly. That's anti you, and you have to fight back at it. So doing things like this, you have to meet in front of people. I know it's difficult, and I know it's hard. But just do it. Like,
but the problem is then, you know, and I agree, but we're also slightly locked into it because it's okay. Now I need to promote this podcast that we're having in person.
Oh,
how am I
going to
do it? I'm
going to
do it on social media.
No, that's what I mean. Is that? But that's the thing. I say with my Instagram, I'm very good at it because one, it's not my main job, and two, I have this acceptance around it. Like, sorry to all my friends there, but like, I don't look at people's stories. I don't like and comment on people's posts. I don't get engaged with Instagram. I use it as a business. And I think there's two different types of people that use Instagram. There are the people that, you know, will use it in a way of just like getting something out of it, which is like getting loads of followers, getting loads of likes, whatever. Putting fake photos in Dubai, in this, whatever, that obviously is going to affect their self-esteem. There's another person who's a random teacher who is in a school and she just goes on Instagram and just looks at other people's stuff, comparing themselves to other people. That in itself is awful. And then there's people that, not like me, but like, I try and be authentic as much as I can. I don't care about editing my photos. I don't care about showing that I'm... You don't even know where in the world I am on Instagram. I in the last 3 months, I've been in Bali, Hong Kong, Texas, all these places. Don't even know where I am. I try and educate people on my Instagram and I try and make people realise that it's not real life. And that's, I think, the best way to be. And also realising that actually it's fucking bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's not...
I was trying to get somebody on here. She's an Instagrammer model. Like, she's come out of it. But this classic, what you think of as an Instagram model.
Okay.
Whatever you're seeing in your head, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
And she wrote an article and she basically said, I did none of those diets and all those exercises. She said, I never even did them once.
Promote them?
Yeah, she was doing, she was an Instagrammer, yeah, like the classic one. And
yeah,
but she then wrote, she just gave up. And she's only like 27.
Yeah.
And she said, I didn't never do those exercises, the diet.
But then, I mean, not being funny, she must have done something, right?
No, but she said some
of the face of it.
You have to.
They're all the face.
I was in the gym 2 weeks ago. I said to the guy.
You in the gym?
I said to this guy, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. Because he just, and I really, because what happens is with online stuff, I said to this guy, you know that stuff you're watching, right? There's only so many ways to like train.
Yeah.
If he's had a channel for 5 years, maybe he's been making stuff up that he's not doing. Because what you have to provide content. Mm. So if I'm going to do something about training in the gyms, that's fine. There's only so much you can do. The rest has to be invented.
Mm.
You have to go, well, there's this thing where we do this thing. And you go, well, you don't do that. You've never done that. But if you've got to keep it up for your channel, which is a business, you have to invent things. So I said to him, that's not an exercise people do.
But was it one where they were hanging and they had bands around them and tied and
make
all this
them up.
Kind of there's stuff?
I probably see it every time I go into the gym where they're doing something. I'm thinking, that's not an exercise. So whatever you've seen, and a lot of the times they'll be damaging the cartilage. I'm thinking, yeah, what you're doing there, and I can't, because it's just like waves of stupidity, and I can't, like, I don't know, it's like you're the freak.
Just let it happen. It's natural selection.
No, it's when I see people hurting themselves, and sometimes I see the... I can't say fitness instructors because they're kids that they don't know. Anyway, I see them. It's embarrassing, but they don't know that they're because they've just copied somebody else. I'm thinking,
yeah,
it's actually when I see people damaging themselves and saying that's not for you, or I see a guy that's really overweight and he's just doing like sit-ups. You go, that's you don't. You got to get the weight off. Why would you kill yourself to hurt? You're gonna hurt you. But the guy's two, three. And thinking, you don't know what you're doing. You shouldn't be. You're gonna hurt.
It's because
him.
You're sold that, you know, if you do 11 billion sit-ups a day, you'll suddenly be ripped to fuck.
Yeah,
it's
no,
like, well,
but
you
anyway,
won't be.
But you also need to look at your diet.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. You and you're killing you. You're gonna hurt yourself trying to do you don't have spot weight loss. It doesn't exist. So sit-ups is nothing. It's the least thing you should be doing. But somebody telling him to do that anyway. But as I say to this kid, I had to explain to him, look, their channels, their sponsored channels, they need to earn money. So they put things on there because they have to. I said to him, how many times does that person release videos? He said, oh, twice a day. I said, so think about that. He's got to keep posting stuff, hasn't he? Mm. He's got to keep it. That means no matter what, I've got to keep putting stuff on there. And he sort of come round to the fact. But it just drives me, because it's all, right. So I knew a Mr. Universe we was talking about. I won't say anything more. But, and this was like 10 years ago. And we was talking about, was in the gym. And he was just talking about the people in this, they don't train properly. And they don't want to, if you try and train them, they'll leave because they don't want to feel any pain because they've seen other stuff, and it's, but they're not going to help you. But he's like I get lines in the sand. We have to look like this at that point. So you have to do things at work. Mm. Anyway, he said that he got approached by somebody to do something for him. So this is 10 years ago. No, 10 years ago he told me. So I don't know how many years it was before that. He said, and get this, like it's almost criminal. He said, right. So they wanted me to promote their protein shake.
Was
right?
It?
No, but I don't. Yeah, you're right. For that's weird. Anyway,
and not yeah.
No, because I think I spoke to the founder as in or whatever.
Anyway. No, you couldn't take that out.
Yeah,
I actually like him. You know.
Anyway, so he said. They said, you got to do this protein thing, right? So, okay, you know, protein, I don't really drink it, but, you know, whatever. So that this is what they were going to do. And this was 10 years ago. He said, so we're going to send you the two cartons of the protein, right? One of them has to be new, put it in your cupboard. The second one has got hardly any in it, put it in your cupboard. We're going to tell you what day we're going to come round, and we're going to wake you up in the morning and get you out of bed. Then you're going to go into the maker shake. You're going to take the half-empty one out.
Oh, to make it look like he's been having it all the time.
And then open the other one. He said, but they literally want to wake me up so I look like no, this looks real. Like, you won't know. Like, don't just fake wake. I'm going to come and wake you up. And you're going to have to get up and go, oh. And then go and get an empty one and go, yeah. And just and it's not promote it, just use it. And then put it and get the other one. And people go, oh, look, it's so natural. I thought, you. That put you in hell. That's like that's type of evil. That
did he say yes?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, good for him.
And that was God knows now that I mean everything's for sale now. Everyone's prostituting themselves now for even when they've got money. Did you see is it South Park? What was the drink that everyone was drinking?
Oh, Prime, wasn't it?
Yeah. Did you see the episode on that? Did you see it? Yeah. It's called something else, obviously. But it's all to do with, like, that's not their drink.
They should call it. Well, they've got better lawyers than we have. They should cut.
But in the end, the guy that's, like screaming, it's not mine. They just give me money to promote it. He's screaming.
But that's what it is, right?
Yeah, but he promotes it. No, it's all rubbish. Nobody believes. And the drink's just, like, full of sugar and whatever. But, he starts crying because they want to take the contract away. But, yeah, some people have just got, they don't understand that it's not the real world. That's all business. That's all money. Yeah. So the most important thing is to know that you have to fight against it. Otherwise it will swamp you. So like you said, it's good. You say, oh, I'm on Instagram. Yeah, it's fine. It's a tool of what you do.
Well, it's your shop window, I guess.
I think I'm a rebel though. I go against the grain for everything.
But this is like me. So yeah. I've said before, like the Lauren Hardy thing where if you're a normal bloke and all weird stuff's happening around you, if you don't go with it, you're the freak.
Yeah.
So you are now the. If you're saying I'm not on Instagram or I haven't got a dating app, it's like what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Why would you not have one? Why are you not on like some? So you have to go. Yeah, I'm the freak.
Yeah.
But I think I noticed with Instagram as well. I think if it's gone mental enough, where it's so hollow and so shallow that the tide turns. And the opposite you do makes you stand out more.
Yeah.
You almost have to be one of the million people turning the boat slowly.
Yeah.
But I said, the only thing you can do is just think, right, what's my bubble?
Yeah.
And hopefully there's other people like me.
Yeah.
And then hopefully over time it just turns. And then you can look back at the stupidity of it all. And maybe it wasn't.
My thing was, I don't like being put in a box. Like, I don't like being like everyone else. I hate it. Even recently, going into more coaching aspect in my life, I was like, I don't want to be an online coach. I don't want to be that person. I want to be different. Like, and it's about finding your uniqueness because everyone is trying to be everyone, trying to be the same, trying to look the same, the duck lips or whatever. Sorry. But it's true. And it's like, I know.
Lost all our duck lip listeners.
No, sorry, guys. No, sorry.
I don't think they'd be listening.
Yeah, no, but it's true. Like, as in, like, there's nothing wrong with that, but as in, like, the more away you go from actually who you are, the more you're going to lose your identity. And
yeah, because people see it. You can fake it for a bit, but over time, it will come. You can't.
I think
keep
you
that
can't.
Up.
You can't lie to yourself. Ultimately, I think that's what you.
If you just saw a sterile photograph of perfect, 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 eventually you just go, this is just marketing photographs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It lasts for a bit, and you get some. Oh, that's amazing! That photo, but you can't keep that up. See, why not just be who you are
and accept
just
who you are.
Let it 100%. Slow burn? And I think times will change. I think it will just. It's gone mental. It's silly.
Yeah.
So I think times will change, and then you become the one that people go to. That's like the real person.
Yeah, I do think that like recently people have been like reaching out to me being like, I love your page because your page is very authentic. I see it how it is. I don't like perfect reels. Yeah. I hate the whole perfect, for me anyway. Like, I'm not a content creator. I did a podcast every week and I said to my friend, like, she's, because she does the podcast, she was like, you're not your typical content creator because I don't have the perfect reel of the day in the life of what I'm eating, or like the running podcast, the running, the reels. I don't do any of that. I make it from what the authenticity of what, who I am. And actually, yeah, I think that should be the way that it is, because actually that's normal.
I think it started to creep back in. I think it was a time. I thought I thought the world was going a certain way, but I think it was a weird blip that now people are being mocked. I mean, even like we've been talking like duck lips, you know, it's now become, oh, it's not, that's silly.
I think there's going to be a backlash against certain like things like images with AI. I think people are just going to go, I see it on Instagram even, things go, why have you used shit AI? Why have you used shit AI? Right. Like loads of comments people aren't. Yeah. Obviously it's going to get to a point probably where you won't be able to distinguish, but I think people, and unfortunately that can mean people are just going to go, well, I don't believe that that's AI.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the real risk, is not
that's
that...
Sad. Yeah.
Not that AI is going to be fake and it's going to make your teeth straight or whatever. The difference is that it's going to go, well, here's some horrible crime being committed, you know, whatever. Here's a neo-Nazi rally, and people are going to go, no, that's not real. That's AI. You fake that, because it just allows people to avoid having any kind of critical thought, or someone, you know, whichever side of the coin you might be on. You just go, well, I don't have to agree with anything that opposes my view because I can just say, oh, that's AI generated. That's fake. You know, it's the fake news thing. It's the same. It's just now everyone's going to have that in their pocket.
And it's just sad though, how like, especially in like today's world where we look at the news, everything, we don't know whether it's true or not. Like propaganda, we don't. Like I can literally go on the news now, or I can go on Instagram and there may be something like Kanye West. I don't even know what his teeth. Do you see he did this? So there was this whole thing that he got rid of his teeth and he's now got silver dentures. Apparently he hasn't actually got rid of his teeth, because my friend's a dentist. But there's this whole thing and it's like, is that true? You don't know. You just don't know.
Well, that's what they're supposed to do in the dystopian future. You just create, you don't trust yourself anymore.
Yes,
I don't trust my eyes. So we can just tell you one thing or another. But I just think... when it gets a bit too much, I just think control your bubble.
Yep.
Like,
so
everyone's
true.
Doing Zoom, and I think just do your thing. Let it happen. Just control that little bubble, the people that come into your life, and just think, at least I can have some refuge in that. I'll just do mine, and hopefully times will change and people will start coming back to that way and appreciating a bit more. Then you're at the front where you weren't the person that sold your soul and got all the fake photographs.
For me, it's about happiness. Like, I last year, you know, was going through a really difficult time with two of my jobs that I was burnt out with. You know, I was surrounding myself around the wrong people. I was very unhappy deep down. And like, I kind of asked myself what I need out of life. And all I really wanted was happiness. And I wasn't happy. And I see a lot of people, they stay in this, oh, I'm not happy. I want to change this, I want to change that, but they don't. And they're so scared. And I understand it's much harder to actually do something about it. But when you actually do stand up and go, actually, I just want to be happy. Yeah. That's when you become a happier person. So obviously when I moved to Bali, like, people message me now and they're like, I actually admire you for what you did, because I saw something in my life that I didn't like and I did something about it. It was fucking scary.
Yeah.
I could have ended up going to Bali and hated it and coming back, but I didn't. It was the best thing I ever did.
There's a weird thing. The guy I spoke to once, right, and don't laugh. He was trying...
I promise
he
nothing.
Said to me, it was years ago, he said, oh, I believe in like Satanism, right? And I was like, what? So that means you like devil worship? He said, no, he said, it's a weird thing. He said, Satan, it's like... it's a weird thing because Lucifer... Right. Mm-hmm. The translation is the light giver, which is he's supposed to be the devil. But
yeah,
he's the light giver. Sweet, Lucifer.
So basically, are you telling us to like Satan?
No, I knew you was going to say.
Yeah.
So, but he explained it anyway.
Are you a Satanist?
No, but it's to do with the self as the.
Yeah, he said.
And you believe in not.
And forget this, but he said, your growth is behind fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fear is the thing that you need to climb over. So your happiness is behind the things that are scary. Mm-hmm. So whether it's cut that person out or don't do, he said, that's you head towards that. So it's not like the devil could have been like, imagine if it turned around and he said, like, if God was the bad thing, he said, you don't have to do everything. Anything's amazing. Life's going to give you everything. Don't worry. When you die, it's going to be perfect. He said, but wouldn't that be the devil? Wouldn't the the real God that cared about you said, look, life is very hard. This is going to hurt. You have to let go of that. You have to jump over that pain. You have to cut that person out of your life. He said, so I live towards that. I said, what makes me feel good? I do those pleasurable things. But it got sort of bastardized and it became about no blood and sex and perversions. He said, it's just about the best things are over pain.
100%.
And I thought, is he pulling me in? Because I sort of agree with him.
It's only when it's like, and here's my business. Yes. Right? Yeah. Here's my hourly rate. Then you're like, oh, here we go.
You got to ask for my direct debit details.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Is he calling me at 3 a.m. asking for 300 quid?
Yeah.
No, but I definitely agree. I definitely feel like we need to take ourselves out of our comfort zone and do things that terrify us.
Yeah.
We don't know what the outcome is. But also, when you are in something that you know that isn't changing you and that is you're staying in the same, what have you got to lose? And that's how I see it.
Well, the saying I heard once, it was that you only change when the pain, the fear of change is outweighed by the pain of remaining the same.
Mm.
And it's really the only time people change when you go, I don't want to change, but you will when you go, I can't take this anymore. So whatever is over that hill, it's got to be better than this.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, so it's best to just run. Don't wait till you can't take it anymore. Yeah. Do it anyway.
But this is what I mean by like when I talk about like people hitting their bottom and going for addiction.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, they get to 60, 70 and they're like, oh, well, I've got my whole life ahead of me. You know, I've got a whole much more life of pain to go through. I might as well keep doing it. Keep telling themselves over and over again. Then they get 80 years old and they can't even do half the things that they want to do in their life. And that's why, you know, for me at 18, it was the best thing I've did to get sober. I had a whole 20, 30 years of using and being bulimic and killing myself. But did I want to? No, because I knew that I wanted to live my life. I knew that I wanted to be the best version of myself that I can be. And it's the same with like the way that I'm wired now. It's like, I could have stayed in that job on the outside that looked amazing. I lived in Canary Wharf with my best friend. I had the best life, but I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
Could have stayed in it. But was I actually happy? No.
Like, was there like a specific moment that made you go?
Point.
Yeah, exactly. That made you
go.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I did go to Bali. I know the difference between, because I'd been through a lot of trauma in my childhood, I'd been through rehabs, I've been through pain, I've been through this. I know what happiness is and sadness is. I know what, you know, I see through the bullshit. I know what makes me feel good, what doesn't. And, you know, I went to Bali and I sat there and I was like, I'm content here. This is something that I want to do. And I'm the type of person where I don't really care about the consequence. You know, I don't care about, and I'm not killing anyone or whatever, but I kind of go, okay, you know, it's not, I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have this. I don't have that. Why not? And then I went to a second job after my 5-year job and it led me to some really, really, really difficult places. I won't go into it too much because long story, but I just remember sitting in my room and being very unhappy, burnt out. It happens a lot in London where people literally working 10, 15 hours a day. Literally, I started smoking, things I'd never said I'd never do again. Obviously, I didn't feel like I was going to drink again, but I went to some depressive moments. And I just sat there and I was like, it wasn't a rock bottom where I was in hospital or whatever, or dying, whatever, but it just sat there and I just clicked. And I was like, I can't do this. And I just quit. And the weight was lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah. That. Whatever the danger is, it's better than, I'm not doing this. It's got to be a better option.
100%. But for me, it was, and this is the thing, it was because of self-worth.
Yeah.
I feel like because of what I've done in my life, because of, you know, really breaking through the grain and getting to this place of like, I know who I am, I know what makes me happy. I do have a lot of self-worth in my life.
Yeah.
I don't let people walk all over me. And I also don't, if there's a job that I know that is going to make me unhappy, I don't do it.
Yeah, because I had a bit of a dodgy background. And it's funny that I think I got everything out of my system that people usually have at 45 when they have a breakdown.
I'm exactly, yeah.
That I got it all out the way early on. Yeah. And now it's clear road in front of me,
where,
rather than having the mortgage and the family and being having a breakdown then when you've got kids or you're with the wrong person and you've got the mortgage and you've got the car in your house and you can't make big decisions like that when you're 50.
Yep.
So I think whenever somebody's had pain at the first half of the role, I think you've got it all out the way early.
Exactly.
All the insecurity, you've got the nothing in front of you, but that's the beauty, because what you don't want to be is halfway up a ladder going, I can't get down now, I'm stuck here.
So true.
Right, we've got to end here because to keep Prem's marriage together.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I hope it's the best.
Where are you going? Do you say you've got something booked?
To the Balloon Museum.
Oh, I've got a friend that was there.
The Balloon Museum.
Is that literally balloon?
It's like balloons.
Yeah, it's balloons. Like an art installation. On,
oh, okay, right. The balloons. Great, this is Karem, our producer.
And then,
and his good lady wife. From.
Yeah,
happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Right, so to keep his marriage together.
Right.
What are you doing in the... What's like... If everything worked out where you are now in like No, not even longer than that. 15 years, you've reached everything. What would you be doing? What would it be? You might not be doing it now. You go, I would love this, this, and this.
Yeah. What? I mean, I'd love to write a book.
Yeah.
I want to inspire people to understand that, you know, the taboos of addiction, understanding addiction.
Would that be what the book's based about? Is this just like a love?
I'd like to write short stories of my life, but yeah. I mean, I'd also like to talk about like a young girl who's gone through what I've been through. I don't think it's common. And I'd like to get married, have kids. I'd love to settle down. And
so the book.
And then that sort of
everything else will take care of itself.
Yeah, and then do more motivational speaking, more inspiring people, that sort of thing.
What would you like to do in the next 10 years, Andrew? Become an award-winning writer?
Probably stockpile enough food and supplies for the coming apocalypse.
Yeah.
I watched a film called The End We Start From,
yeah,
and they stockpiled, but then they hadn't stockpiled enough.
Wait, is that the one with Julia Roberts? No.
No, Jodie Comer. I know the film you're thinking, I forgot the name of it now.
That wasn't great.
Because it has a very similar sort of slightly wordy kind of, this is called The End We Start From.
Yeah.
Which is grammatically very strange, but it's intentionally so. And it's starring Jodie Comer.
I love her.
Yeah, it's really good.
Love her.
Well, good luck with your apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be there.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll all be there.
And so people want to look you up. Yeah. So Lauren Amy White.
So I am Lauren Amy White is my Instagram, I think. LaurenWhiteSpeaker.com is my website. I've got Twitter. I don't really,
But many people Google you that way.
Yeah, so Lauren Amy White, if you Google me, Lauren Amy White Speaker will come up and you'll be able to see all my stuff. I've done a couple of podcasts, done talks. I'm doing talks at like a couple of talks at the end of the month. So I will be doing more stuff. And if people wanted to work with me as well, and people are struggling with self-sabotage and struggling with their self-esteem and self-worth, then send me a DM.
Yeah, because I had a look at your, I started like going through, but I was like, well, I don't actually need, but I was like, no, I'm not going to go through and fill in the whole form. But it was, but you can sign up to get help from you on your website directly, can't you?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you very much for coming on the Sunday.
It's been amazing.
Good
connections.
Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Here's your story. Let's begin. The world is fine. Come on, dive in. The future's here. It's right before your eyes. Good to be alive. You could be larger than life.